fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome to The Cale Clark Show on this Wednesday. So good to be with you. And you're going to want to call in. I have a funny feeling the phone lines are really going to light up for this particular episode. 888-914-9149. It's our listener line, sponsored by the Catholic Order of Foresters Life Insurance. 888-914-9149. You can also email the program, KLCALE, at relevantradio.com. And you can find me on the X app at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And I love it when people email me show ideas. You can become a shadow producer by emailing me a clip, maybe a link to an article that you found interesting. I think I might have a take on it too. Faith, facts, and fun. It's all fair game on The Cale Clark Show. The email address is Cale, C-A-L-E, like I said, Cale at relevantradio.com. And the chief of shadow producers, though, and her position will never be taken away, is my wife, Patricia. And she sent me an article that I got to tell you, I think this will get the phones ringing. And it was actually written, came out on Sunday in the New York Times, written by Ruth Graham. And she shares a name, of course, with the late wife of the late Dr. Billy Graham, who's probably the most famous evangelical Christian of the 20th century. He died at the age of 99 in 2018, Ruth having passed a few years before. No, this is a different Ruth Graham. I'm going to talk about Billy Graham, though. It's actually kind of interesting to mention that because he does figure into this. Ruth Graham is a religion reporter for the New York Times. And this past Sunday, she came out with a piece called Piety and Profanity, The Raunchy Christians Are Here. The Raunchy Christians Are Here. Okay, well, this is really all about this question of, has there been a lowering of moral standards among the religious right and also among the political right? And very often those two categories overlap in a Venn diagram of sorts. Has there been a general lowering of moral standards in America among the religious and the political right? It's an intriguing question. I think you probably are going to have a take on this yourself. So call this number right now as we're going through this, 888-914-9149. And Ruth Graham starts off by talking about, and by the way, I'm going to try to keep this as PG-13 as I possibly can. But apparently there was a pinup calendar that came, I think the first edition came out last year. I remember hearing about this last year, but there's a new edition in 2024 and it's called The Conservative Dads, Real Women of America 2024. The Conservative Dads, Real Women of America 2024. This is not something that I have seen. And I'm half wondering whether Trish sent me this article. Hey, Cale, have you heard of this? Have you seen this pinup calendar, Conservative Dads, Real Women of America 2020? No, I don't know what you're talking about. No, but it's true. I literally have not seen this. I have heard of it, though. I have heard of it. And apparently it features kind of old school images, ladies, bikinis, sports cars, bubble baths. I don't know. I guess that I haven't seen this. I'm not condoning this at all. However, who are the models in this Conservative Dads, Real Women of America pinup calendar? Well, Ruth Graham doesn't name who they are, and I haven't seen it, but one of the models is a Blaze TV host. And that's kind of appropriate. And you'll see why in a second. A Blaze TV host wearing a short skirt lights a copy of the New York Times on fire with a cigar. Talk about a blaze. And it's Ruth Graham, the New York Times columnist, had to note that. They're firing up, literally, the New York Times. And as Donald Trump famously called them and has called them for many years, the failing New York Times. There's another model in this pinup calendar who you've definitely heard of before, the former NRA, the National Rifle Association spokesperson, Dana Loesch. And she is in it too. And apparently she's holding two rifles in her, I don't know what month she's in. I have no idea. But who made this calendar? Ruth Graham doesn't say, but the company behind it is a beer company. And she doesn't say which company it is. I have no idea who it is. But she says it's published by a woke-free beer company. End of quote. And it was the reason why they launched this last year, the first edition, was obviously in response to the whole kerfuffle with Bud Light and its transgender spokesperson, Dylan Mulvaney. Obviously, you know about the backlash that Bud Light endured because of this incredibly foolish decision. And so this group, whoever it is, this beer company, decided to create something called the Conservative Dads Real Women of America pinup calendar in response to this to provoke the left, if you will, to own the libs, as it were. But what's interesting about this, and this isn't so much about politics at all, but this is really the question for me, which is kind of interesting that this raises. This whole calendar actually created a lot of controversy amongst conservatives, amongst those who would consider themselves part of the religious right. A very heated debate about whether or not this calendar should actually be rejected by conservative dads. If you're a Christian, whether you're a Catholic Christian or an evangelical Christian, should you reject this calendar outright because it's immoral? It objectifies women, that kind of thing. Or here's the other point of view. Some people are saying, it's not a big deal. Just embrace this as a win for the good guys. It's irreverent. Yeah, I know. But come on. This is what I want to talk about. What do you guys think about this? 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. So if you're on the line, just hang on, okay? 888-914-9149 if you want to talk about this. So what one of the people who came out against this idea of the conservative dads Real Women of America calendar was an evangelical who's extremely popular, extremely well-platformed, if you will, on X, formerly known as Twitter, Ali Beth Stuckey. She's a podcaster. She has 441,600 X followers, 441,600, which is about 341,300 more than what I have. That's a lot. And she actually came out and said, this is ridiculous. I condemn this in the strongest of terms. This conservative dad's calendar, Real Women calendar, is nothing more than quote unquote soft porn marketed to married men. And she said, look, this is a huge problem because it objectifies women. Many other Christian conservatives agreed with her and said, this is absolutely disgusting. But here's the interesting thing. This is the point of tension, I think, for Christians with this, because the lines are being blurred. And here's why. It's because of maybe who's involved with this, some of the people who are involved with this. So who is the cover model on this calendar? It's Riley Gaines. Now, Riley Gaines, you've no doubt heard of. She's been very, very much the forefront in the culture wars. She's a former college swimmer at the NCAA level. And she very famously lost a race to a transgendered individual who is calling himself now Leah Thomas. And this is just obviously on the absolute cutting edge of the debate regarding men participating in women's sports. Very anti-woman for sure. No doubt about this. But here's the thing. So Riley Gaines was in this Conservative Dads Real Women of America calendar. But she also speaks a lot at churches, most likely probably evangelical churches, conferences. And she says, my fight, she's basically framing her fight against males competing in women's sports. She calls it a spiritual battle. Really, there's a spiritual battle here. But is she being inconsistent here? Is Riley Gaines being inconsistent here? Is she right about that, which I think she is, but is she wrong to have done the other thing, which is appear in this calendar, the Conservative Dads Real Women Calendar of America 2024? What do you think about this? 888-914-9149. It's Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Okay, now there's a Catholic angle to this as well that you should probably know about. Another calendar girl, if you will, who's in this publication is someone who goes by this particular handle on X, formerly known as Twitter. She calls herself the Redheaded Libertarian. The Redheaded Libertarian. She's even more popular than Ally Beth Stuckey. She has 614,100 X followers. She's well over that magical 600,000 mark. And her real name in real life is Josie Glaubach. Josie Glaubach. And she's Catholic. And apparently in her shoot, her photo shoot, which again, I haven't seen this, but Ruth Graham describes this in the New York Times. She, in her photo shoot, there is a crucifix hanging prominently on her kitchen wall. She's wearing a miniskirt, an apron, platform heels. And she is kind of mad. The redheaded libertarian is kind of angry at people who condemn her for being in this calendar. She says, look, I'm just trying to provide for my family. I'm definitely a conservative. I'm definitely a Catholic, she calls herself. And she actually, the New York Times describes her in this way. Ruth Graham in the New York Times says, quote, using vividly vulgar language, she wrote that she doesn't care, quote, if the fact that I look hot doing any of this offends your senses, end of quote. So the redheaded libertarian actually took that quote and she's using it in her ex bio now, in her Twitter bio. I am vividly vulgar, according to the New York Times. What are your thoughts on this? I don't care if this offends you that I'm in this calendar, the Conservative Dads Real Women of America 2024 pinup calendar. Is this sending the wrong message? And so this is really the question at hand here. Has there been kind of a lowering of morality among the religious right in America and the political right as well? We're going to talk about the political angle in just a minute. But again, I don't want to talk about politics in general here. But Ruth Graham in the New York Times says, speaking of Ruth Graham, the other Ruth Graham was the wife of Billy Graham. And she said, look, you know, in the 20th century, going into the 21st century, the turn of the millennium, there's no way this kind of thing would have got off the ground in the evangelical world. Think about the time of Billy Graham. Think about the time of President George W. Bush. Think about the time of Ned Flanders. I know Ned Flanders is still around. He's not a real character, of course. He's on The Simpsons, and he's kind of the caricature of an evangelical Christian. This sort of, as the article puts it, the cheerful prude who lives around the corner. And she says that in the Republican coalition, conservative evangelicals have long influenced party policy, opposition to abortion, opposition to same-sex marriage. Catholics are in on this too, by the way. Catholics certainly are part of that that influence too. And then this whole sort of push against vulgarity in the culture. That seems to have gone away a little bit because she says, Ruth Graham says, quote, a newer raunchy ethos has elbowed its way into the conservative power class. And she says you can kind of time this to around the time that President Donald Trump decided he was going to run for president. Back in 2014, 2015, and of course he was elected in 2016, and 8 out of 10 evangelicals voted for Donald Trump. But a lot of them, according to the article, a lot of them voted for Donald Trump, according to the author's words, they called it a transactional relationship. They basically, I guess you could say, they felt like they had to hold their nose and vote for him because they weren't happy about his own moral indiscretions, but they knew that he stood for things that they wanted to vote for. For example, the idea of getting pro-life judges on the Supreme Court, and that actually happened, and that led to the fall of Roe versus Wade. So I guess they kind of considered that a trade-off. They considered that a deal worth making, but they weren't necessarily happy about that. But at any rate, this is one thing that's being alleged by Ruth Graham in the article, that the, and you know, obviously he said some things, and I'm not going to repeat them here, about women and things that he did to them and all that sort of stuff. And I don't want to sort of rehash that, but this idea of a coarsening of the public dialogue about purity, if you will, or morality, there seems to be a shift here. There seems to be a shift here, according to this article. And even some, there's one author that was quoted in the piece as well, saying, actually, this goes back all the way to the 1990s. Conservative talk radio, perhaps referencing the late Rush Limbaugh. I don't know. I never actually listened to Rush Limbaugh. I know who he is, obviously, who he was. He passed away, but never actually listened to his program. But this is what's being alleged here, that the shift might go all the way back to the 1990s. But let's just talk really quickly about the political angle here. We can talk about figures like Lauren Boebert, Representative Lauren Boebert from Colorado, who was recently out at the movies. And all I'm going to say is that she was caught on camera vaping in the movie theater, and maybe vamping as well, if you will. She was being inappropriate, let's put it that way, with her date. She was called out for this. And then she said, look, you know, I've been through a very public, a very difficult divorce, and this actually fell short of my values and standards. Okay, I understand that. That's an incredibly sad and difficult reality that she's been through this divorce. But that made a lot of headlines. Another example that's used of sort of just the coarsening of dialogue in public discourse, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, she obviously refers to herself as a Christian. She is very well known for cussing at people in hearings on the House floor, even talking to reporters. You probably heard some of these clips bleeped out. So these are things that happen. Another representative was invited to the Christian prayer breakfast in Washington, Nancy Mace. And actually, you might have seen her in the news recently. It was actually pretty compelling television. She was in a very heated exchange with George Stephanopoulos of ABC News this week. I don't want to get into that. It's kind of a side topic, but I do have a lot of respect for how she handled herself there. She was invited to speak at the Christian prayer breakfast in Washington, D.C., and she, even though she was speaking at the prayer breakfast, she was very open about the fact that she was cohabitating with someone who is a man who is not her spouse. And that was referenced in her talk. And there was a backlash to her remarks. And here's what she said in response to that. She said, and she wrote this on the X platform, "I go to church because I'm a sinner, not because I'm a saint." Okay, fair enough. But what about go and sin no more? We just talked about the woman caught in adultery this week on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. That's what you're listening to right now, 888-914-9149. I'm super curious to see what you think about this. Do you think that there has been a general lowering of morality amongst people on the religious right, maybe even on the political right as well? And those two categories often very much overlap. Let's go to the phones right now, 888-914-9149. Let's go to Greg in Chesterton, Indiana, Northwest Indiana. Hello, Greg.
Hey, Cale.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Fantastic. What's your take on this, Greg?
It just reminds me that basically the conservative movement is a dead movement that, you know, when you look at it, it's basically just liberalism from 10 years ago. They're not really conserving anything at this point.
So you think it's become very akin to what used to pass as liberal about a decade ago?
Yeah, that's why most conservatives agree with gay marriage and, you know, pretty much. Yeah, you look at most conservative leaders, they agree with everything Democrats said 10 years ago. Maybe the exception being abortion.
That's interesting. Yeah, I don't have any stats on that, Greg, but that's an interesting take. And thanks for calling in with that. And I wonder whether our other listeners would agree with that most conservatives, their views aren't exactly conservative anymore, what was classically thought to be conservative. 888-914-9149. Okay, so here's another interesting thing. This is kind of an insight into the evangelical world. And I know this world very well. And obviously, religion factors heavily into elections. There's no question that is the case. And it's definitely going to factor into the 2024 elections as well in the USA. And obviously, especially the Republican Party, but you know, everyone wants to get the evangelical vote. And one of the things that Ruth Graham says in her New York Times piece is that the way things used to be, and I know this full well because I spent a lot of time in the evangelical world. I was an evangelical pastor before I came back into the Catholic Church. I spent about 10 years in the evangelical world. So I kind of saw that world from the inside. And I remember the stuff that she's talking about here, that back in the 1990s, maybe even into the early 2000s, there used to be, huge conferences for teens about purity, evangelical Christian schools had these very, very strict dress codes, focusing in on modesty. And these girls would actually wear these purity rings. And guys would wear them too, maybe. Purity rings. And this was sort of a pledge to commitment. I'm not going to engage in any kind of sexual activity until I'm married. And hey, of course, that is what the scriptures teach. It's also what the Catholic Church teaches as well, that this would be called fornication. It's a mortal sin. And this is obviously very biblical. St. Paul writes this in his letter to the Ephesians. Do not, even in terms of, forget about thoughts, what about talk? Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths. And then he writes too in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, flee from sexual immorality. Run away. And St. Jose Maria Escrivá, the founder of Opus Dei, said, this is one time when you're actually being brave by running away. You need to be brave and you need to run, just like Joseph in the Old Testament ran away when Potiphar's wife tried to seduce him. He ran right out of his technicolor dream coat and took off, took to his heels. And you got to do that too. We all have to do that. Paul wrote, abstain from all appearance of evil. But here's the thing. This doesn't seem to be the case anymore. It seems to be okay to engage in vulgarity in the religious world in America. I don't know what you think about this. 888-914-9149. We've got to take a quick break right now on the Cale Clark Show, but we'll be back. More of your phone calls. 888-914-9149. Be right back.
Explaining the faith so you can explain it to others. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Hey, welcome back to the program on this Wednesday, 888-914-9149. So glad to have you with me. Talking about a really interesting piece right now in the New York Times, which appeared on Sunday, written by Ruth Graham. It's called Piety and Profanity. The Raunchy Christians Are Here. It's really this question of, has there been a coarsening of morality, if you will, among the religious right and also maybe the political right as well. And kind of maybe the big case in point here is the existence of something called, which I have not seen, the Conservative Dad's Real Women of America pinup calendar. All right, and this has sparked a lot of conversation and a lot of thought about what's going on here. What's some of the background here? Patrick, is Michael still on the line? Is Michael online? 888-914-9149. Okay. I think Michael dropped. Okay. Let's go to Laureen in Albuquerque, New Mexico on line six. Hi, Laureen.
Hi, Cale. Thanks for taking my call. So my opinion is that we've always been conservative. But probably some of us that were, that thought we were more liberal didn't really realize just how far left could possibly go, and that we're more conservative, actually. And because I'm Catholic, been raised Catholic, don't believe in abortion, and I never realized that the Democrat Party, if we're talking politically, was the party of abortion and the Ku Klux Klan and all of that. So it was more of an awareness when Donald Trump came out on the platform, and I didn't particularly care for him, but then I started to think about, well, what does he stand for, and who am I actually voting for in these elections, and who have I voted for in the elections, and how I'm responsible for that. But the other part of that is that, you know, we're silent so much that it's like when you get a voice, when you have an opportunity, and I get this. I mean, I try not to do it myself. Sometimes people will curse in the middle of it because they're, number one, they're exerting some energy, some pent-up frustration that they haven't had because they haven't had a voice or a platform to release it, and basically fed up. That's not an excuse to say, but it's definitely where I and those that I, in my circles, are might be coming from. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. It does make sense for sure. And something you said earlier, and again, like, I don't want to make this necessarily about political parties, but it does seem, something you said does seem to be true. It's extremely hard. There are a few people out there. There are very few, though, pro-life Republicans. And they are very, very few and far between. Or not Republicans, excuse me, Democrats. I only had 4 hours of sleep last night. It's catching up with me. But having said that, no excuses. It's very rare to hear of any Democrat who is an official representative who holds a pro-life position. It's almost like you have to be pro-abortion to be a card-carrying member of that party. And so I wish that wasn't the case, but that seems to be the way it is right now. And it's also true what you said earlier historically, talking about the 19th century, of course, the Civil War. A lot of the politicians who were involved in leading the Confederate States of America in the Civil War, slave owners, members of the Ku Klux Klan, were Democrats, no doubt. Having said that, you know, the modern situation, things have changed quite a bit since then. But I want to get back to the, and thank you for your call, Lorraine. I really appreciate that. Absolutely. 888-914-9149. I want to get back to this question of what's going on in the culture and why, especially with this idea of a coarsening of the culture. And I want to get into this whole issue of lust, if you will, because this is also kind of in the background of the conservative dad's Real Women of America 2024 pinup calendar. This idea, is it okay? Is it just good, clean fun? Are we just owning the libs here, quote unquote? Or is this actually kind of sinful and objectifying women? Is this sinful lust? Well, it seems like a lot of Christians seem to be confused about this as well. This is a quote here from the New York Times piece, and this is from a sociologist at the University of Nebraska in Lincoln, Kelsey Burke. She says this, quote, "There's an automatic assumption that men are more sexual than women and they have this hypersexuality that is natural. A certain amount of lust is a sin that they acknowledge, but it's also part of the natural male condition," end of quote. So it almost sounds like she's saying that for a lot of guys, they're sort of saying, it's just kind of who we are. It's kind of how we're wired. And there's no question about it that guys are very, very visual in terms of their temptations, no question about it. Now, I do know that this is true, and I never used to believe this, but then I actually heard about this in real life quite a few times, speaking to college students, university students, doing seminars on the theology of the body. There was a time when almost all consumers of pornography were men, but that is changing. Women are into this as well for various reasons. I've heard them talking about it. I've heard their stories. It's something that shocks me, but the stats definitely play that out. I think part of it is just the mere proliferation of it that's out there. It's ubiquitous in the culture, especially in the smartphone culture, since the advent of the internet in your pocket. It's the Wild West. There's no question about it. But this whole question touches on the teachings of Christ, the Sermon on the Mount, when Jesus says, hey, you have heard, and talking about the Old Covenant law, you have heard, thou shalt not commit adultery, but I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart. And every guy who hears that says, well, who can be saved? but here's the thing. As J.P. II said, Pope John Paul II said, in the Theology of the Body, he says, do not fear these words. Instead, have trust in their saving power, because Christ is never going to give you a command that he's not going to give you the power to fulfill. He can transform it. He can transform that look of lust into a look of love, as it were. Who's saying look of love? I can't remember. Anyways, 80s band. I'm losing my mind here. Patrick Kalog will remind me for sure. ABC, was it? Was it ABC? Look of Love? All right. I think it was. Anyways, so that brings up the question, well, what is lust? And we talked about Billy Graham before. this sort of coarsening of the evangelical culture. Not that would never happen on his watch, but I remember once watching a Billy Graham. They were called crusades at the time. They don't call them that anymore, but they're called campaigns or meetings or something. But I remember the great Billy Graham preaching, and he was talking about this, and it's actually one of the best jokes I've ever heard in my life. He says he asked this question a lot by men. What is lust? So his response was this. This is Billy Graham, Dr. Billy Graham. He said, if you look twice, it's lust. So make the first look count. Hilarious. People laughed. Yeah. But all kidding aside, I think maybe a better definition of lust is the one that was provided by Christopher West, obviously one of the early commentators on Pope John Paul II's theology of the body. He kind of was the only guy writing about it for a while. He kind of cornered the market, if you will, on it. So Christopher West, in his writings on theology of the body, and I know people have different takes on West's take on theology of the body, but I just want to say this. This is one quote that he had. He would say this when it comes to lust. What is lust? What's the definition of lust? He said it's sexual desire without the love of God. I really like that definition. It's sexual desire without the love of God, because sexual desire of man for woman is certainly God-given, no question about it. God designed it, wrote it into human nature. So that in itself is a good thing. But when you take the love of God out of it, it becomes a huge problem, and it can become totally sinful. It becomes selfish. It becomes turned in on self. It becomes all about use. And one thing that John Paul II said, before he ever wrote Theology of the Body, he wrote something else called Love and Responsibility. Love and Responsibility. He wrote this in the 1960s, late 1950s, early 1960s is when it kind of started to spread around when he was a young bishop. The dawn of the free love era, the swinging 60s, Woodstock, all that stuff. The advent of the pill, quote unquote. He said this in Love and Responsibility. He said, to love someone is the very opposite of what it means to use someone. And that people get those two things confused all the time in modern culture. What passes for love today is nothing more than use. It's nothing more than selfishly using the other person, their body or whatever, for your own what have you, if you will. So this is the difference here. So when you look at the love of God, people ask the question, you know, what is love? Like that old song by Hathaway, what is love, baby, don't hurt me. All right, I won't hurt you with more karaoke, but what is love? It's a total gift of self. And I know Sarah is on the line, on line two, and Sarah wanted to ask the question in California. She wanted to ask the question about, hey, I was in a Catholic church recently. I saw a cross without a corpus. There, it wasn't a crucifix. It was just a bare cross. What do you think about that? Well, I certainly prefer the crucifix, and I'll tell you why. It's because when we look at a crucifix, when we contemplate Jesus dying on the cross, this is love, because love is a total gift of yourself, a total gift of self. This is what Jesus did for his bride, the church, on the cross. Yes, Jesus has a bride. It's not Mary Magdalene. It's the church. And the church was born out of his side, the second Adam, Jesus Christ, just as the first Adam, Eve, was fashioned from his side. When the blood and water came pouring out of the side of Christ on the cross, when his side was pierced by a lance, that was essentially when the church was born. Baptism and the Eucharist, the blood and the water represented there. And this is really what we base the wedding vows on in the Catholic Church, because the couple is asked four questions. We're going to get your calls in just a second. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. It's Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. So the couple is essentially asked four questions. Have you come here freely? Or is your mother-in-law making you do this now? Have you come here freely to give yourselves without reserve to one another? In other words, are you going to give yourself totally? Love has to be free. Love has to be a total gift of self. Do you promise to be faithful unto death? And will you accept children as a gift from God? And will you raise them according to the laws of Christ and his church? So free, total, faithful, fruitful. Those are the four parts of the wedding vow. And this is really what love is all about. And Jesus Christ did this for his bride, the church. Did he come freely? He says, absolutely. In John's gospel, he says, no one takes my life from me, but I lay it down of my own free will. And we'll talk about this, of course, more during Holy Week, Good Friday. It's not so much that Judas betrayed him, the Roman soldiers nailed him to it. He went to the cross freely for you and me. Is his love total? This is my body given up for you. It's a total gift of self. Is he faithful? I will be with you always, Matthew 28, until the very end of the age. Is his love fruitful? Does it produce new life? I have come that you might have life. John chapter 10, verse 10. The thief, the devil, only comes to steal, kill, and destroy. He's anti-life. But I have come so that you might have life and have it to the full. And when we're born again through water and the Holy Spirit in baptism, at the baptismal font, the womb of Holy Mother Church, if you will, we're born again, born naturally of our parents, born supernaturally in baptism. This brings about life, new life. And God wants new life. So this is the true definition of love for sure. Love always brings about this abundant life. But here's one last thing though in the article about this whole idea of the coarsening of morality in the religious world in America, maybe even the political world as well. It's almost like one writer points out, Christian Cobbs Dumez, who was quoted in the article. She said, it's kind of interesting because this idea of vulgarity, maybe the lust isn't that big of a deal. Maybe a conservative Christian women pinup calendar isn't that big of a deal. Why are people saying that? Because right now in the culture, there's so much outrage and even disgust at things like transgenderism and how it's affecting young people. That people are almost kind of saying, well, maybe lust and heterosexual, maybe it's not that big of a deal. Maybe that's not something to really worry about because we have much bigger fish to fry over here, huge problems over there. So maybe we can just kind of turn a blind eye to this. Maybe it's not that big of a deal. And she even says people are thinking it's maybe even a wholesome thing for a boy to be lusting after a beautiful woman. Well, I don't think that's a good way to look at it. This idea of it's a lesser of two evils, let's not indulge lust here. Let's not indulge lust here. Let's get rid of both, right? The terrible, what's marring human sexuality in the culture. But let's turn lust into true love, okay? Yes, attraction between man and woman is God-given, but let's not give in to lust. Let's make it more of a look of love, if you will. And this is really, really important for us. So yes, the design of man for woman is God's plan, but not in the wrong context, not at the wrong time with the wrong person outside of marriage. And even in marriage, don't forget, John Paul II talked about this as well. You could be guilty of lust even in your own marriage. You could look at your spouse as an object. So you can't do that either. You can't objectify your spouse. You have to look at them as a full person created in the image and likeness of God. You might say, wow, you're blowing my mind, Cale. 888-914-9149. I want to hear your reactions. We will be right back with your phone calls right after this break. 888-914-9149. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Faith, facts, and fun. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the program. 888-914-9149. Do you think there has been kind of a degradation in the moral culture in the Christian world in America? Has there been a coarsening of moral values, not only on the religious right, if you will, but on the political right as well? 888-914-9149. Very interesting piece. Very thought-provoking piece in the New York Times about this. Piety and Profanity. The Raunchy Christians Are Here by Ruth Graham. Talking about this bizarre scenario, I can't believe this is even real. The Conservative Dads, Real Women of America, 2024 pinup calendar. Oh, yikes. All right, let's go to the phones, 888-914-9149. Let's go to Sarah in California. Hello, Sarah.
Hello. I think the Catholic women should really explore wearing the lacy mantilla.
The mantilla? The mantilla, yeah.
Yeah. There are so many numerous videos on YouTube and all over the place that explain how a woman has really received inner spiritual connection to modesty through the mantilla. It's beautiful. And so many things are veiled in the Catholic faith, such as the Eucharist, you know, at the altar there. Mm-hmm. They'll veil it in the end of Mass. They veil the sanctuary. Mm-hmm. The tabernacle. Yeah. They'll veil a bride. And it's just a beautiful experience. You really got to try it. But a woman, as in the calendar issue, she should guard against provoking a married man to lusting her. Even the expressions of the faces in a photo. I feel sorry for men. They are bombarded with titillation. And, you know, you take away the makeup, the lip fillers, the Botox, the fake eyelashes, the hair extensions, the spray-on tan, the hair dye and extensions and silicone boobs and the fake nails. And you know what? You get the girl next door, baby. You know, your wife is more beautiful in the morning than all that. Okay.
Well, Sarah, that is, I'm very curious to, first of all, this whole idea of wearing mantellas, it's intriguing because this is based on something that St. Paul wrote in his letters. Now, I have some information on this. I'll have to talk about this another time. Some people think this is a huge misunderstanding of what St. Paul was talking about, this idea of women wearing veils and covering their long hair and all that sort of stuff. I'm going to get into that another time because I don't have my notes in front of me. We're kind of running out of time here. But this idea of modesty is definitely, I think a lot of other women probably want to call and weigh in on this, because where do you draw the line between fashion that's you know, I don't know what the word is, like classy would probably be a good word, and stuff that's clearly drawing attention to yourself in that way, and maybe a way that you don't want to present yourself. And of course, guys we need to all guard our eyes too. For sure. Is it fair to put all the weight of the blame of this on women? I don't think that's necessarily the case. But you've raised a whole bunch of stuff in your call, Sarah, and I thank you for that call in California. If you want to respond to anything Sarah said, call in 888-914-9149. All right, let's go to Alan on line 9 in Sacramento. Hello, Alan.
Oh, hello. How you doing?
Good, good. What's your take, Alan?
Okay, what I wanted to say was, and it's really simple. Mm-hmm. Love is simply wanting, truly wanting, and doing what's best for somebody, no matter who it is or what the relationship is. That's what Jesus did for us. And as far as the modesty and things of that nature, the Catechism explains that in such a beautiful, unbelievably beautiful extensive, whatever, eloquent, you know, way. I mean, and it's all in that Catechism and of the Catholic Church. And if a child isn't nurtured, I mean, truly nurtured, through the Church in a godly way, he'll never ever get it right. He'll never get it right. Mm. They will always be confused, and that's what's happening in the world today. If you're not following the most basic, simple words of Christ. And actually having those things explained to you as a child, and I mean, as an adult, too, that's what it took me. But if that doesn't, it just can't work. It's not that it won't work. It's impossible to work. If it's not done Jesus' way, it'll never work. And they'll always be wondering about that.
Hey, Alan in Sacramento.
I mean, they just can't.
I agree with you. Incredible points there. First of all, this idea that love is doing what's best for the other person. What's best? That's certainly involved in that. This whole idea of love is a total gift of self, and it's also making sure that you don't lead somebody else into sin. Loving yourself as well, not falling into these sins for sure. Not. And there's so much temptation out there. And what you said about young people, especially if they don't have the formation, if they don't know anything about the teaching of the Church, if they don't know how much God loves them and about His plan for their lives. They're kind of thrown to the wolves, if you will. And there's so many evil influences, I would say even demonic influences, clearly in the culture behind some of this stuff, for sure. It's just so heartbreaking to see, you know, innocent souls being led down the primrose path, that wide path, as Jesus says, that leads to destruction. And we have a lot of work to do. This is why we have Relevant Radio. We want to bring Christ to the world through the media. We want to catechize people in every possible way. And This is what we talked about yesterday with the Merry Beggars as well, and Peter Atkinson from the Merry Beggars joining me for the whole hour yesterday, because we want to reach kids when they're young, and they need to hear especially these inspiring stories about saints so that they can become saints themselves. Absolutely, because holiness equals happiness. You want to be happy in life? Be holy. St. Jose Maria said, if you want to be really happy, be really, really holy. If you want to be super happy, be super holy. Become a saint. And that's what we all have to do anyways. Only saints make it to heaven. And if we don't achieve perfect holiness here in life, God's going to have to clean us up a little bit in purgatory for sure. That's where we're going to have to learn to let go of some of these other things so that we can live 100% and only for God, because it's only God who will satisfy. All right, let's go to Ricardo. Thank you for that call, Alan. Appreciate you. Let's go to Ricardo in Austin, Texas. Hey, Ricardo.
Hey, Clark. Thank you for taking the call. So, you know what? I was thinking that before 2016, you could hear the politician talking about their faith and how they profess it, and you could see them with wearing crosses. And at that time, I believed them. Because, you know, where they were opposed to abortion, same-sex marriage, and things like that. And you guys talk a lot about this. And when you guys talk about how Obama administration was promoting all of those things, I was doing it for you guys. I was thinking, good job, guys. You're doing an excellent job at pointing to things that are not Christian. But then 2016 came, and Trump came, right? And we know, find out all the things that he said and he did. Him being a millionaire, who knows what things he did, you know, in private with all the money, being the guy promoting Miss Universe and the things that he said he did. So when he came out and started saying all those things, all the politicians just came and say, well, he's not a politician. He's just a normal guy. He's not used to that. So, and then again, he came out and said all the things, anti-Christian, and people were excusing them. All Christians, friends that I know, they were saying, well, you know, nobody's perfect, and he's just a man, and things like that.
And yeah, Ricardo, we live in a strange situation where people who profess to be Christians and even profess to be practicing Catholics in the political sphere are promoting things that are clearly and absolute opposition to the teachings of the Catholic Church, things like abortion, things like IVF. And we could go on through the list. And it is an odd situation. We have others who perhaps pretend to be something they're not. I often wonder, I don't know, I'm not even sure if Abraham Lincoln would be electable today. I think he was just too honest. Honest Abe, we need more good men like him in politics. Absolutely. And anyways, but fascinating discussion today, guys. Really appreciate all of you. Trending with Timory is up next on Relevant Radio. And of course, Father Rock, you'll be along later with the Family Rosary across America. Thanks for listening to the Cale Clark Show. Jim Shaper produced. Miranda Sinisteros also produced today. And Patrick Gaylock took the phone calls. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.